Welcome once again to Deep Fat Fried.
Hello,
starring
friends.
Your best friends. Fuck this shit.
You don't no.
You don't get to be Brad Pitt.
Leave it up.
No more.
Leave it up.
You don't get to be no Brad Pitt. You got to be Paul's ego.
And why wouldn't I just get some mojo going?
I sentence you to life as Paul's ego.
I was fucking Boom. Hot.
Guys, I read a story. I didn't pull it or anything. I don't know where it is. I'm not going to bother.
Who
but
cares?
I did fucking see a story.
Yeah.
Where a guy who was sentenced to life in prison was arguing that he should be released because he had died on an operating table and was revived. He's like, I fulfilled my life sentence. Let me go.
Nice try, but that's not going to work.
I think
interesting.
I think they should let him go.
Interesting.
He served his life. He died. That's life. That was
no,
his life.
You know what?
Send him. Let him go. Free him.
If he gets John Snow, if he fucking is like dead, like he's cold to the touch, he's dead. They bury his ass, and he comes out and crawls out of his grave and is like, I'm alive. Then I say you let him go.
I don't think he's going to win, but I admire his gumption.
He's not going to win.
He's got moxie.
Yeah, he's got that certain something, that chutzpah that
Scotty,
we
you
all
wanted
want.
To, you wanted to shill, right?
Yeah, I'm a shill.
Scotty, you wanted to fucking...
Obviously.
You just feel like you don't have enough money, so
I
you
don't.
Felt like you needed to fucking go bother our
I
fucking
don't.
Audience. Like, hey, give us more money.
Well... Who doesn't want more money, TJ?
We're not rich enough in our palatial mansion.
Look, TJ, in capitalist America, you gotta make your fucking money.
You gotta make your cheddar.
You gotta fucking do it. I'm a slave to the system. What you want me to fucking say?
So basically, we got one of these stupid fucking you choose things.
A fucking-
where patrons get to choose. You know, I think they should know. Me and Paul hate this.
Well, you know what?
Because you know what? I think of it gives them delight
to the
bring you misery.
People. I listen to the fucking people unlike you guys.
Yeah, well, we're going to listen to them, but it's fucking under protest.
They hunger, TJ. They hunger.
They get to choose a fucking DFF, which, as if you guys could choose better DFFs than us. Yeah, fucking right. And then they get to choose a movie we get to watch. They get to torture us with some shit movie. Because they like making us suffer.
Well, let's be honest. We're
not that we could
movie.
Suffer any more
yeah.
than we did fucking watching Jack and Jill.
Oh, my God.
The black hole of commentary.
Don't ever mention it again.
Dude, I literally told our patrons when I put it out, don't bother. Don't watch
oh,
it.
Oh, there's patrons like, I'm not going to watch this. And I was like, literally like, good
yeah,
idea.
God. Yeah, you shouldn't.
You're smart.
Yeah, sometimes we just find one that defies even our skilled hands.
Yep, there's nothing we could do with that piece of shit. It was that bad.
Sucked all the
well,
energy
I am getting
out
my hands
room.
On a DVD for Return to Frogtown.
But if you want
to
see us suffer... Yep, you can do that, and you also get to give provide stories for an episode of Flash Fried.
You guys always send in stories like this story, this story, this story.
So this time
this
it'll
time,
be your choice.
This time we're actually going to listen, though. That's the difference.
Yep.
We used to just go like, meh, they know nothing. But this time we actually have to go, all
so
right, I hear you.
You can pay us to actually take your stupid fucking opinion seriously and torture us with your fucking awful taste. So
absolutely.
Why? Who? How are you going to say no to that? How are you going to say
you
no?
Can't.
To shitting
you
on me and
fucking
Paul.
Fucking do it.
Also, we got more. We need even more money. Well, not us, but this fucking dog here. We're going to put the fucking shit in the description. My family's been bugging me about this. This is their dog, Rebel. Sweet dog. Totally cool dog. One of the fucking nicest little doggies you'll meet.
I mean, you can yep. tell what a good boy Rebel
right,
is
he's
just
absolutely
looking at pictures
is.
Of him.
And,
I've met Rebel. Everybody that meets Rebel gets loved on by Rebel.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good boy.
Super sweet dog. In a lot of pain and suffering right now. He's got some serious back problems. They've already sunk a lot of money into vet stuff.
Horrible neck issues.
So my family's just looking for a little bit of help, a little bit of relief from the amount of fucking crazy money that they're spending to try to get Rebel healthy again and feeling good again. And, you know, I know there's a lot of animal lovers in our audience, so if you're one of them, you know, this fundraiser is down below.
There you go.
Thanks,
so
guys.
There you go. I've fulfilled my obligation.
You've been a family member, TJ.
Yes.
Congratulations.
I have done something nice for my family, and I donated, by the way, to the fund, so I'm not on the hook for fucking any of my own personal cash either.
Damn.
So it's all good. I done what I done, and fucking no one can say otherwise. No one can talk shit now.
Who would? Who would, TJ?
You know what,
no
TJ?
One. No one.
All right, TJ, let's do a little role playing. You want to do a little role playing,
all right,
TJ?
A little role play.
Okay, you be you. And
I'll be the sexiness.
All right, that's fine. But I'm be one of your fans, all right?
All right, you're a fan, and I'm me.
Got hey, you rich! Give them the fucking money! They're your family! Fuck you, TJ! Eat shit and die! You're nothing compared to me!
Nothing. No.
How's that?
That was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I like it.
Thank you.
Pretty accurate. Really accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty run of the
I
mill.
Thought you really captured the essence.
I mean,
you
I tried.
Definitely did.
I am a thespian.
Distilled it.
So if you guys are curious about, maybe, by the way, maybe you're a fucking $5 patron. You're wondering, like, is it becoming a $10 patron worth it? So I just want to let you guys know that we've increased the length of these pre-post shows.
They're basically shows on their own now.
They really are. We used to just do 10 minutes, and I felt like that's not really enough for someone who's paying double the money. So
you guys like the banter sode, right? You probably really like. Maybe we'll put one out, one.
Yeah, we do a lot of things. We were just like on the most recent one, we were looking at the new trailer for the terrible new movie Scoob.
Yeah.
The new Scooby-Doo movie.
Looking at some Rule 34 of Velma.
We're fucking discussing which is hotter between Daphne and Velma.
Came to a definitive answer.
We know the answer, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, it's Velma, spoiler.
So we were from about 10 minutes, now they're about 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, right. We've been fucking cranking them out at about 30 to 40 minutes a pop. So if you're a $5 person, you're kind of like, I don't know if I want to do the fucking thing just for a 10-minute fucking video. No, we do about 30 to 40-minute pre-post shows now. They're a lot longer. They're a lot more involved. We talk about news. We talk about some other stuff that's going on. So, we've really kind of bulked those up. So if you're on that kind of threshold of like, should I upgrade? All right. So that's plenty of shilling. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. Holy shit. It's the holidays. I know you guys are being squeezed. We're being squeezed too. So that's why we're desperate for your fucking money.
And you know what? Give Pink Floyd
give us your fucking money.
You fucking Pink
give us
Floyd
your
show.
Fucking money.
Nah, what greater present?
We'll get you content
than giving money to us.
All kinds of content. You don't even know.
You don't even. You don't even understand.
And a lot of people don't understand. What other people don't understand is they think that there's like a misapprehension out there about what happens when you join our Patreon. They think like, oh, I joined the Patreon and then I can only watch the stuff that's coming out now.
No.
No. You get the entire back catalog. You can watch all the Friday shows, all the Cinema for Cynics we've done, all the Cinema for Cynics movie commentaries.
It's an absurd amount of content.
All the pre-post shows.
It unlocks hundreds of hours of content.
Crazy
this,
shit.
We've been doing this for 2 years, so there's a lot of
shit. There's a giant backlog of shit that you haven't seen before, so join on up. It's fucking good shit. So blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Give us your money. We'll give you content.
Chill.
I mean, it's like, I understand it's necessary to shill, but it's probably the least fun or interesting thing to do on a fucking show.
On that note, TJ, asking for money, let's talk about tonight's episode, TJ.
All right, let's do it.
We can do that.
Weird Bible stories, TJ.
We've done that before. You're just a rerun.
Yeah, we're doing some new ones.
This is a rerun, Scott. We've already done this.
And there's some new shit, TJ.
There's not.
There's some new shit.
Bible's fucking 2,000 plus years old. How the fuck is there new shit?
Because I fucking found another book in the Bible, TJ.
You did?
He went into a cave. I saw him do it. He went into a cave and came out with an old dusty scroll.
Sweet.
It's called TJ, The Testimony of Scotty.
Do you know what this book in front of us is, TJ?
The Burble.
Do you know which one it is?
Mogadishu?
That's right. The Mogadishu.
The Book of Mogadishu? I don't know. No, I don't.
Looks pretty old, doesn't
it? This is the Gutenberg
Bible. Yes, thank you, Paul. An educated man.
I've seen the Gutenberg Bible
That
before.
Was my second guess.
This was the first printed and widely distributed book anywhere.
You're so smart, Paul.
Hans Gutenberg.
Yeah. So, TJ.
Hans.
The best-selling book of all time.
Yeah.
Although it's impossible to obtain exact figures, there is little doubt that the Bible is the world's best-selling and most widely distributed book.
Which sucks because it's not even good.
Checkmate atheists.
I know. A survey by the Bible Society concluded that around 2.5 billion copies were printed between 1815 and 1975.
Yeah, but you got to realize, too, a lot of those are just rotting in hotel rooms.
Yeah, that is true. Or sitting in boxes in some warehouse somewhere. To think that, like, how many books... Because you know who also does this? The Church of Scientology.
Of course.
They order a bunch of fucking L. Ron Hubbard's books to be printed so that they can stay on the fucking, lists and shit. But the fact is, nobody's buying L. Ron Hubbard books anymore.
But guys.
I am.
More recent estimates put the number at more than 5 billion.
Cool.
That's great news.
That's insanely sad to me. This stupid-ass fucking brain-dead book of contradictions
how
is the best
you,
thing
how
ever.
How dare you, Paul? How dare you say these
sorry,
things?
Sorry.
Come on, Paul. We're
I'm
trying to be
line.
Civil here.
I'm out of line.
We're trying to be civil here.
You're right. You're right.
By the end of 1995, combined global sales of today's English version, good news, TJ, this is good fucking news for everyone, in New Testament and Bible, and the copyright for which is held by the Bible societies, exceeded 17.75 million copies.
That's pretty insane.
And the whole Bible has been translated into 349 languages. Yeah, and 2,123 languages have at least one book of the Bible in their language. So the whole Bible, 349, 2,123.
I mean, the only languages you can't get the Bible in are like those weird languages like the Senegalese speak on their own little island that nobody's been to since the fucking 20s, and that person was killed. You know what I mean? Like, the Bible exists in, like, American Indian. I've seen American Indian Bibles. It exists in fucking Aboriginal Australian. Dude, you can get the Bible in pretty much any fucking language as long as, like, commerce and society comes to your fucking lands.
You guys are wondering why we're talking about how popular the Bible is. You're about to figure that point out. But suffice it to say that the Bible is pretty much everywhere. It's not hard to find a Bible. Maybe if you're in Saudi Arabia or some shit, then you have a little difficulty.
I mean, definitely here in America, you can trip and land headfirst into a Bible pretty much anywhere. That's true.
You would say a lot of people would read the Bible, right? They have a Bible.
No, because it's boring as fuck.
Well,
let's
actually go to the survey, TJ. This is religiousnews.com. So
where's the survey? Here we go.
There should be a link there.
A link?
There should be like, there's a link to an article.
Damn fucking Scotty didn't pull this shit right.
Oh, shit, TJ. You fucked me up, man.
All right, here we go. I found it. You didn't even pull it.
I pulled it, dude. You fucking closed the goddamn tab.
I didn't close nothing. Get out of here.
Yeah, we're not going to give you our fucking email address. So how much of the Bible have you personally read? All right. So let's start. All of it, 11%.
Liars.
All of it more than once, 9%. None of it, 10%. You follow it, but okay. Only a few sentences, 13%. Several passages or stories, 30%. At least half of it, 15%. And almost all of it, 12%.
Where would you guys fall on this pie chart?
Probably several passages or stories.
Yeah, I'd probably be in that 30% block myself.
When I was a teenager, I read the whole Bible. I'm in
from
that 11%, dude.
From start
I'm
to finish.
11, yep, I'm an 11%.
How'd you get through it? Because, I mean, like, I tried to do that one time, and I got about halfway through, like, I didn't get halfway through shit. I got to the part in Genesis where it just becomes an endless litany of begat.
I did it in Bible study format, so I had these audio tapes that my stepdad had of, like, a preacher that had gone through the whole Bible, so you're supposed to, like, read it along with. Well, you read it, and then you listen to him kind of explain it.
You know, I know there's a
that's how I got through it.
There's a James Earl Jones reads the Bible out there somewhere.
There's a bunch. This dude was some kind of fucking, it was on audio tape, so I don't even remember the dude's name. It was on, like, old school reel-to-reel, you know, put it in your tape deck type of tapes.
So you read the Word of God, but it didn't convince you? So,
I was pretty desperate at that time, too. That's why I did it.
The best thing about this, though, is that more than half have read little or none of it, reports Lifeway Research. Even among worship attendees, less than half read the Bible daily. So people who are, like, committed Christians, like, I've bought into this way, this worldview and this way of life.
That's not shocking.
So I'm going to tell you something right now.
They're reading it.
Let me tell you something. Less than half, bullshit. It's probably like 10% that bother cracking that thing open on any given day.
Well, that's the thing. Is like you can't trust religious people's answers on this because they want to seem more learned in their religion than they are.
Yeah, they want to seem way more
pious.
So
a lot of them are going like, oh, yeah, I'm you know.
Half.
It's probably way lower than 11%.
Yeah, not only that, but the Bible, I mean, like, look, the reason they go to church in the fucking first place is so they can have someone else fucking recap Bible shit to them because they don't want to read it themselves.
Yeah.
If they were really just going to sit at home and read the Bible, they wouldn't bother going to the fucking church house. And listen to the fucking preacher man talk. They just sit back. They just sit home and read the Bible and figure it out for the fucking selves. There's a reason they fucking hire a dude to stand up and give them a book report about this fucking thing every week.
Basically. So it's kind of interesting. If you live in America, roughly 65% of Americans identify as Christians. Though admittedly, I can pull the next slide.
I guess I could if you want.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is it this?
Yeah. So as you can see, the number of Christians in the U.S. is declining, TJ.
Good.
2007, the religious landscape studies, 78%. Aggravated Pew Research, 77%. And now it's sitting at 65%. So
shit. It's, I mean, like,
in 12 years,
I remember looking
12%.
This, a massive decline.
Yeah, I remember looking this up, you know, a while back and it being around the 70s. And I didn't even know it had declined this far.
And look at the other one, the other graph on the bottom, religiously unaffiliated. That has gone from 16% to 26% in the same time period.
So a lot of people are, like, we're really reaching a point in our history where people are really turning away from this religion.
Oh, and ever more so. Like, the millennials and Generation Z, the Zoomers and shit
are like, eh, this doesn't
matter. At record pace are just going, no, we don't need this anymore.
I mean, this just is in the U.S., too. I don't know how this reflects worldwide. But, yeah, the U.S., I can kind of tell because nobody even wants to really talk about it anymore. It's kind of just boring now.
Even people that talk about religion now or, like, are into it, it's it's been reformed a lot. Now it's changing where it's like, almost like a hipster lifestyle thing. If like, you know what, you can be whatever. You can be lesbian. You can be gay. You can be bisexual. You can be transgender. You can do all this stuff. I mean, that's obviously still the fire and brimstone places, but like to stay culturally relevant with the woke generation, you could totally tell there's been a massive shift.
Look, you can suck all the dick you want as long as you keep giving our church some money.
If we're
going
to get paid, we don't care. Do what you want.
To be honest with you, too, it's just become more accepted to say you're an atheist now. So a lot of this fucking shift that we're seeing just might be people that were previously
lying,
incentivized to lie because it was socially.
Yes, I am a Christian.
Yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah.
Yeah, because you know, I think
now they don't really have to do that.
And I'm sure you guys have probably been in this situation, but you kind of bring up a good point. Like, have you ever been in a group setting? Everyone's like, "Well, everyone here is a good Christian, right? Or everyone here believes in God, right?"
I've had shit happen to me for sure.
And then you kind of sit there and you're like, "Should I even say anything to this person? Because I know if I do, like, they're not going to be like, oh, I accept you the fact that you don't believe any of this bullshit."
The times it's happened to me are all just like when I go places that I don't normally go, and people start praying and shit. And it's just like, do I fucking make a deal out of this, or do I just go like, okay, fine? I'll shut up for 5 minutes while you pray.
Yeah, just recite some bullshit.
Paul shutting up for 5 minutes. I don't know.
That is an achievement.
I believe the stuff in the Bible more than that.
So if you're a Protestant or a Catholic going, well, that's all a bunch of Protestants are losing out. That's a bunch of Catholics losing out. Both Protestants and Catholicism are experiencing losses of population share. Currently, 43% of U.S. adults identify with Protestantism, down from 51% in 2009. Damn, 10 years, you guys are dropping a lot. And 1 in 5 adults, 20%, are Catholic. Down from 23% in 2009.
Those are the people that really got me scratching my head. Because, from I think any perspective, if you follow the news that comes out of the Catholic Church over the last 20, 30 years, it is so obvious that it's just a coven of crazy pedophilic vampires and shit. Like, I don't see any other fucking... Like, how are you still standing behind a church that just moves abusers around to different parishes and shit as
a
standard practice?
I mean,
it's fucking ridiculous.
Well, these are people that aren't very good at critical thinking to begin with because they're not really questioning what's being told to them. I mean, like, the fact is that the Catholic Church has tried to cover up these things. Even when they're caught, has tried to protect themselves and the organization far more than the people that were hurt by it. And the evidence is clear. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It's not even up for debate. It's not something you say, well, you know, maybe it's like, no. It's systemic throughout the entire organization.
It's case after case after case after case all over the, not just the United States, but every fucking country.
Well, remember in the 90s, it was exposed first in Ireland.
Right.
That was kind of the genesis for all this actually being.
And what we've learned in the intervening years is that it was happening everywhere.
Yeah. Anywhere there's
literally everywhere that the Catholic Church puts its footprint, weird fucking policy.
Before it was even a story, I remember kids in my school making jokes about Catholic priests.
Oh, it was an open
people.
Secret back when we were kids.
Yeah, no one. It was. I mean, like, even before it broke as a big news story, people still knew it was going on.
Of course. So it's just like, who are these 1 in 5 people that are like, yep, that's my church? Like, what the fuck? What do they got to do? Start beheading people on national TV?
I think a lot of those people that you're talking about would just be like, about time.
Yeah.
See, you guys are like this. Meanwhile, all subsets of the religiously unaffiliated population, a group also known as the religious nuns, have seen their numbers swell. Self-described atheists now account for 4% of U.S. adults, up modestly but significantly from 2% in 2009. Agnostics made up 5% of the U.S. adults, up from 3% a decade ago. And 17% of Americans now describe their life, their religion as nothing in particular, up from 12% in 2009.
So, like, we're getting to the point where people are not even like, I'm an atheist. They're just like, I don't give a fuck.
So, TJ, we're going to do a little bit of math. I know this is probably not your strong suit.
Ah, math.
So, the current U.S. population... is about 329 million. So if you take that number and you figure out 65% of it, that's 208 million, TJ.
Okay.
So those are the people. So 280 million. So if you take that number we saw before, which is Pew right here, so 65% of Christians, that's about 208 million Americans, right? That's a sizable number of people.
Right.
So with that number in mind, now consider what we read earlier. Roughly 10% of Christians have claimed to read their entire Bible. So in this case, now the number we're going to extrapolate is 28 million. So of all those people, only about 28.
I think that number is padded.
And it's probably padded.
Oh, yeah. It's big time padded.
So the point of all this is to demonstrate in just one country how many people who claim to believe in the teachings of a book they've never read aside from a few famous or culturally relevant passages, yet this collection of books forms the foundational bedrock of Christianity. You know, maybe if people bothered to read the book, they'd be less inclined to believe. Maybe not. But anyways, it's time for some weird Bible shit.
Nice.
The whole thing to me is like, people buy into this, and they don't even know what's in it. So let's have some weird shit.
I mean, I got to be honest with you. It was reading the whole thing slowly and methodically that led me to my position, running into a lot of this stupid fucking shit.
And how?
Reasonable explanation for.
Oh, and a lot of it just comes out of nowhere. But here's the first story. And Paul, you're actually involved in this one.
Oh, sweet.
So this is Eutychus, raised from the dead at Troas. So Paul, that's you, was preaching at Troas, so you probably remember that.
I do.
And a teenager named Eutychus decided it would be a great idea to sit on the sill of an open third-story window. Unfortunately, that wasn't a good decision. So the sermon ran a little long, you know. Paul had a lot to say. I bored him to sleep,
and he fell out the window.
Long story short, Eutychus fell asleep and fell out the window, breaking his neck. Before his family could even start planning the funeral, Paul raised him to life again.
Yep, I did.
It's crazy, guys. So, TJ, can you pull up the next one?
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have the aftermath of Paul reviving the child. That's Paul right there. Good job, Paul.
Hey, no problem. It turns out he just bumped his head pretty hard, and he was fine. I woke him up, and everything was great.
So if you want to read this yourself, I have a nonsense locator for everyone in the audience. So this is Acts 20, 7 through 13.
Nice.
So we're going to read this. On the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Paul spoke to the people, and because he intended to leave the next day, kept on talking until midnight. Paul never shuts up.
It's true.
There were many lamps in the upstairs room where we were meeting. Seated in the window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. Very common.
Uh-huh.
When he was sound asleep, he fell to the ground from the third story and was picked up dead. Paul went down, threw himself on the young man. Whoa. What the hell, Paul?
Hey, you gotta revive somebody.
I mean, damn, doesn't sound like much of a revival.
My methods? How many people you fucked back to life, Scotty?
I don't know. None.
None.
And put his arms around him. Don't be alarmed, he said. He's alive! Then he went upstairs again and broke bread and ate. After talking until daylight, he left. The people took the young man home, and he was greatly comforted.
There you go.
Wow, dude.
Brought him right back to life. Don't worry about it, guys. He's fine.
So if someone dies during a sermon and it's so boring they die from it.
I mean, it's pretty nice that Paul revived this kid because, I mean, like, the kid literally fell asleep during his sermon.
Fell to his death.
You know, Paul must have been in a really gracious mood that day because, you know, usually he would have just been like, fucking fall asleep when I'm talking. Fuck you.
But, you know, when you're a little horny, you throw yourself on a young man.
You never know.
You can revive him. You can give him new life.
You don't know what went on. That passage never reveals my methods, man.
I guess it doesn't.
Yeah, it never explicitly says what happened.
Never tells him what I did.
Well, at least we can all agree that listening to a sermon can bore you to death.
How did you revive the kid?
That's for me to know and you to find out, bitch.
Okay.
Next time Paul's giving one of his famous, you know, all-night sermons, TJ, sit on the third floor windowsill, fall asleep, and maybe you'll find out.
Maybe you won't, though. Maybe that night I won't be feeling so charitable.
Yeah, I think Paul would just be like, he's dead.
That bastard did not know the ways of the Lord.
Oh, shit, I'm dead again. What the fuck?
Yep. That's what happens, TJ.
So this is Ehud and the King of Flab.
That ain't Ehud. That's me.
Oh, damn, it's you.
Look at me.
Damn, TJ.
It's before I shave my head, but still, that's definitely me. I recognize myself when I see myself.
So, it's a reoccurring pattern in the history of ancient Israel. The Israelites are living comfortably. They turn away from God. God sends calamity on them to force them to turn back to God. And then God raises up a hero to save them once they return to faith.
Mm-hmm.
In this case...
How else would you do it?
Yeah. Eglon, the king of the Moab, had taken over Israel. What a dick, dude.
Fuck.
And God had raised up the hero Ehud, whom the scriptures say was a left-handed man. After helping to deliver a tribute to King Eglon, whose scripture notes was a very fat man. I mean, clearly you can tell here.
I like him.
Ehud tells the king, "Psst, I have a secret message for you, O king." So the king sends everyone else out of the room. Get out of here. Ehud here has got something important to tell me. Unfortunately for him, he probably shouldn't have done that. As Ehud came to him, as he was sitting alone in the cool roof chamber, and Ehud said, "I have a message from God for you." And he arose from his seat, and Ehud reached in with his left hand, took the sword from his right thigh, and thrust it into his belly. And the hilt also went in after the blade.
Damn,
and
that's
the fat
a hard stab.
Closed over the blade.
Damn.
He stabbed him in the... Basically, it was so fat...
So the sword was all, like, encased in him.
Yeah. It says sword here. In the King James Version, it calls it a dagger. So perhaps that's why...
Or maybe they just cleaned it up in the King James Version, look, because having a whole sword in you just seems a little fucking far-fetched.
But you know what? Nonsense located for this one is Judges 3, 20 through 23. So people are saying, hey, it's out of context. Here's the context. Ehud then approached him while he was sitting alone in the upper room of his palace and said, I have a message from God for you. As the king rose from his seat, Ehud reached with his left hand, drew the sword from his right thigh, and plunged into the king's belly. Even the handle sank in after the blade, and his bowels discharged.
So he shit himself, dude.
Ehud did not pull the sword out, and the fat closed in over it. Then Ehud went out to the porch. He shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them.
Dude, they didn't have very good security back in the day.
Not at all,
I mean,
man.
You think that, I mean, like, if I was the king, which clearly I was, you were
part of that, dude.
And some dude shows up, he's like, yo, I got some news, but no guards or anything around.
But you know what? You don't have any security now, so maybe you still haven't learned your lesson, TJ.
Yeah, it's true.
Where's our security?
I think you're getting really fat, dude, so when you get killed, when you get stabbed, the blade's just going to be consumed, like kind of like the thing, dude. It's like,
what are we going to do if Ehud shows up and fucking wants to knife us all now?
I don't know.
Fuck, dude. Not take a meeting with him for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely don't take that meeting. If he's like, I got a message for you from God.
Yeah, Ehud, don't call us. We'll call you. Okay?
That's when you pull out the nine and blow his ass away.
So the next part of the episode, I like to call the foreskin section.
Cool.
Because the foreskin in the Bible is like an extremely important
thing. Very contentious piece of skin. You're absolutely right.
If there's one little tiny piece of skin, God's biggest blunder. Well, it's not God's biggest blunder, TJ. You have to lose your foreskin for a reason. We're not even going to get into that, TJ. We're going to get into... God tries to kill Moses, but his wife saves him with his son's foreskin. It's good to have... So, look, TJ, foreskin can literally save
your life.
Gotta
keep that around.
That's what I'm saying. You're fucking talking shit, but if he hadn't had his son's foreskin, what would he have done? So everyone knows the story. The Hebrews were slaves in Egypt. God spoke to Moses in a burning bush, and then Moses asked Pharaoh to let my people go. That's all true, except for a short 3-verse interlude... That never seems to make it into the movies, TJ. No one ever seems to talk about this part.
The hidden part.
Yeah. It's not hidden, but just no one talks about it. After being commissioned by God from the burning bush, Moses is on his way back to Egypt when this suddenly happens. At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Moses' wife...
So wait a minute. So Moses goes and talks to the burning bush, which is God, right?
Yes.
And the burning bush gives him a revelation.
Yes.
And then on his way back, God's like, never mind, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
So why would God kill the dude that he just gave this important message to?
So, TJ, this is what happens.
Okay.
Then his wife, Zipporah, took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it and said, surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. So he let him alone. And it was then she said... A bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision.
Okay, I get it. So the angel came to kill Moses. So thinking quickly, Zipporah's like, I know, I'll chop part of my son's dick off and then touch it to his feet. And then the angel will be like, whoa, obviously I can't kill him now.
Makes total logical sense.
I mean, I get it.
I can see why this is still practiced everywhere today.
So there's no immediate context or explanation as to why God is suddenly trying to kill Moses, why Zipporah thinks to circumcise their son to save Moses, or why touching the child's foreskin to Moses' feet assuages God's intent to kill Moses.
Wow.
It's all pretty obvious from the story.
So I read some, like, I obviously went looking for, like, what was the Christian apologetics on this? What did they say about it? And the basic explanation was the son and, like, and some of the passages that says, like, him, it refers to him, is actually the Pharaoh's son. The Pharaoh's son is actually this in with them. And because of God's plan, he doesn't actually want to do it at that point.
Okay, so Moses was resistant to cutting off the foreskin, and God sent the angel to kill
him
for that.
I don't really know. It's Christian apologetics, but that's basically the kind of the gist of it, of how they justify it.
I'm going to be honest. I still don't get it.
Well,
but
God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah. I guess so.
I don't really know.
God works in incomprehensibly stupid ways.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Gotta love him.
Because in the Bible, it's really weird. When you read that passage, it's like, okay, and I will go to Egypt, and it's like suddenly it's like God's like, you know what? I'm going to fucking kill you. It's like, okay, what if we cut off my son's foreskin?
It's
all right.
It's like the alien scene from my Isaac Plumbo movie. It's just like, comes right the fuck out of nowhere. Yep. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it just goes back to normal after that.
Yep.
So we got to continue with our foreskin theme. So this is David and the 200 Foreskins.
Okay.
Which I think would be a good name for a band, TJ. So if you're ever interested in having a band name.
Whoa. Okay. So
the King of the Foreskins.
So here's the basic rundown,
what
TJ.
What the fuck am I looking at?
Basically, David wants to marry a woman.
Right.
But her father, who happens to be the king, wants the foreskins of his enemy before David can get married.
Right. Makes sense.
You know, that makes sense. You know, you like, I got some enemies, these Philistines.
Maybe he really liked Famunda cheese.
Maybe he liked it. I don't know. But really, it was kind of a trap. He wanted David to die. Because the king thought David would be killed in the process of gathering the 100 foreskins, but not David. David actually goes and doubles that. He's like, you know what?
He asked, you asked for 100? Here's 200, bitch.
Here's some extra foreskins. Extra Famunda for you. There you go, king.
The king's like, God damn.
Holy shit, that's the most foreskins I ever did see. And look how happy the girl is, too. She's like, oh, that's my man with that bag of 200 foreskins.
Oh, you need to bring
that
in.
And the king, he looks like he's about to fry those fuckers up or something.
He's blowing a load in his kingly fucking pantaloons
right
now.
Oh, my God, so many foreskins. I can't wait to just roll in them.
Oh, my God.
So here's the biblical passage about it. When Saul's servants told him what David had said, Saul replied, "Say to David, the king wants no other price for the bride other than 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemies." Oh, man. Saul's being a dick. He's trying to have David killed. So here we go. When the attendants told David these things, he was pleased to become the king's son-in-law. So before the allotted time elapsed, David took his men with him and went out and killed 200 Philistines and brought back their foreskins.
Damn.
They counted out the full number to the king, so David might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him his daughter, Michal, in marriage.
That's a pretty hefty price, dude. He had to do a lot of circumcisions to get this chick, so I hope she was, you know, I hope it all worked out well for them, because,
well, I mean, you know,
I mean, slaying 200 men, then cutting off their foreskin, then delivering it to the king. I mean, the king's pretty impressed, though.
A
I mean,
small price to end up king yourself, though, you know?
I guess that's true. He does end up king.
Right. So, I mean, like, you know, that was just another, I mean, like, the fact that he went and got more than he needed. He's like, you know what? I could just get the 100 and be like, yeah, I met your challenge. But I'd rather blow that challenge out of the water and give you double them foreskins.
I like the idea that Saul just got more and more excited as he counted each foreskin. You know what I mean? Like, one foreskin. Oh, two foreskins. Oh. You know, and by fucking 100, he thinks he's done. But it's just begun.
That's only, you know what I mean? That's only
half.
Then
David just pulls out bag number two, and the king's like, holy shit, what?
I can't take it.
How many fucking bags has this kid got?
200 foreskins. Oh! I love it, dude. This one actually happened. I believe this part of the Bible.
Yeah.
This one happened.
It's barbaric enough to actually believe this one. So, guys, if you're going to practice being a priest, one thing you gotta know is God ain't fucking around, dude. You want to do your offerings? That's fine. You want to praise God? That's fucking fine. You fuck up, some serious fucking consequences.
God's serious business, bro.
He is serious business. I mean, people don't realize that, but he's
God fucking ain't fucking around, man. You can't take that shit lightly.
So, Moses' brother, Aaron, had two sons, Nadab and Abihu? I don't know.
Abihu.
They appear only briefly in Leviticus when Moses.
We'll just
call
them Mike and Dave.
Whatever. When Moses is showing the priest how to priest properly. Following the rules prescribed by God, Aaron slaughters some animals, cuts off the bits he's supposed to cut off, and lays the offering down on the altar the correct way, lights up some incense, and waits. God approves of the ritual and makes a big light show to tell Aaron that he did well, and all the priests celebrated job well done. So, there's actually a fucking important series of steps, and God judges you at the end.
Yeah, it's not the God of today where he just kind of doesn't do anything either way. Back in the day, he lets you know.
You got a light show. Do you got like a fucking fireworks display? Like, yeah. I am pleased.
God would fucking shoot up some fireworks. You know, there'd be some orbs and shit floating around, doing a little happy dance.
So, Nadab and Abihu, they, unfortunately, God wasn't pleased with them.
Well, you just said he was.
Oh, not with Nadab and Abihu. No.
Oh, with Aaron, right.
No, Aaron, he was fine. Aaron, he was chill with. Aaron did things the right way. You know what? Isn't that a problem with kids, TJ? Never bother to do things the right way.
Right.
Here's the Bible passage, TJ. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein. If you wonder what a censer is, it's basically just the thing to hold incense.
Yeah, it's that thing those dudes are holding there in the picture.
Yeah, they wave around.
Yep. And put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had commanded them not. Oh, shit. And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord.
So he just burnt them.
Yep. Consumed them with fire.
Yeah, they're like, all right, how about some incense? Does this please you, God? No, God doesn't like, please me. Die.
And not only is God displeased, God doesn't even want them fucking complain about it. Then Moses said unto Aaron, this is it that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all people, I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace. So it's like, you know what? He killed your sons, but they fucked up. It wasn't God that fucked up. It was them that fucked up. And it was righteous what God did, because God's perfect. That's all. That's only fair. You know what? God kills your sons. He's got to fucking deal with it. What else are you going to do? It's God.
Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, so what did they even...
Now, look, there's been a lot of debate among scholars.
What did
exactly
they even do wrong? I don't
Nadab
even get it.
And Abihu did wrong. I get where you're coming from. Some suggested that they used the wrong incense. I mean, come on. If you don't use the right incense, you think God's not going
to
notice?
I mean, we've all been to a restaurant and ordered the chicken fried steak, and it got crossed up in the kitchen, and we get a burger in front of us, and we just immolate the serving staff.
Well,
right,
yeah,
on
that's
the spot.
True. I you do carry I mean? My flamethrower around just in case someone you gets my order wrong even what? Slightly.
You think God?
I said no ketchup! Die!
You know, if God asks for gold and you bring myrrh, what do you think is going to fucking happen, dude? You're fucking gone.
Boom, flames.
God ain't going to put up with that shit. You fucking put the wrong incense in there. He's like, I don't like the smell of this shit. You're fucking dead.
Yeah, this incense reeks. Fuck you two hippies.
Well, others think they may have lit the fire wrong.
How do you light a fire
wrong? I mean, look, they did it wrong. Look at these two fucking smug assholes in this picture. If you're watching this episode, look at these guys. He's like, hey, we lit the fire good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God's like a rock star.
Not good enough, though.
That doesn't take shit from his underlings.
God's
you know
like,
what I mean?
My rider specifically said only green M&Ms.
Yep.
Now you die.
You burn.
You will burn now for my amusement.
I don't feel any fucking empathy for these two stupid
asses. No, they obviously fucked up royally.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asked to put one kind of incense and you do another incense, you don't think the boss is going to notice?
Look,
stupid ass.
I mean, look how cavalier they look, too. I mean, they're not taking it seriously. The guy's like, oh, let's put this incense in your head. God's going to love this. You know, the Lord's going to be fucking ecstatic.
Yeah, let's just slack off and give him the wrong incense. What do you think? Oh, yeah, he's a dumbass. He's not going to notice that we use the cheap shit.
I mean, Aaron's surviving children and nephews then have to bury their dead brothers. But Moses warns them to be doubly careful, because if they make God any angrier by complaining or not even combing their hair properly, probably kill everyone in Israel.
Sounds like he was just sick of their shit. You know what I mean? These two guys.
Now, you know, you got to realize, too, these are Jews he's dealing with. So,
yeah,
I mean, like, God's probably got an earful of, like, God, my hemorrhoids, you know, so.
He's had enough of their belly bitching.
I apologize to any Jews watching. It's a joke.
You just fucked up big time, TJ.
Boy!
You've just Me Too'd yourself hard.
I apologize.
That was racist.
Paul said it, not me.
That was racist. You're a racist, TJ.
I'm TJ, and I'm saying this.
You know what I'm going to do? After I finish stuffing these censers with this cheap-ass off-brand incense, I'm going to go fuck up while I'm lighting that fire. I'm going to cut corners, you know what I mean? Fuck this guy up there telling me I got to do this. I got to rub this twig on that twig. Fuck that shit.
Got some pork.
A fire is a fire. You know what I'm saying? Incense is incense. Bada-bing. Nope.
God's like, I don't think so,
two
bitch.
More slackers removed from the world. Get out
dead.
Of here.
Dead.
How just, dude.
Dead.
You gotta admire God, you know what I mean? He knew what he wanted.
Yeah, you know, he fucking knows what he wants, and he knows how he wants it.
Who cheaped out on the incense after fucking Nadab and Abihu?
No one.
Nobody.
Yeah.
They got the right fucking incense in there.
Yeah,
guaranteed.
God shows up.
Hey, started that fire just so.
God set those motherfuckers straight.
How'd you like that fire? Just how you told me, God. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I knew that because I was watching it. I'm God anyway.
If you're the fucking all-powerful creator of the universe, you're gonna put up some bullshit? These two fucking losers, they can't get it right. They deserve their death.
I got no sympathy for them.
They deserve their fucking
death. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you fuck up, you burn.
I hope they're still burning in hell.
They probably are. Which is just like a big pile of that stinking ass cheap incense. You know what I mean?
You know, guys, TJ actually texted me something, because this is a two-part episode. You know, we're not going to talk about just the Bible, though we could talk about it all day. This is something that I think that kind of gets overlooked, that we all use, and we all just go, okay, terms of service, whatever, you know, I agree, because I'm giving my soul away to the company. In some cases, people have actually done that.
Of course.
They've put that in, that do these things, as usually as a joke, of course, because they can't legally take your soul away. It doesn't even exist anyways. But even if it did, you would have probably signed it away.
Well, I mean, let me tell you what the terms of service are to me. They're the thing I got to scroll through and hit the check mark on so I can use the website and or play the video game.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's
to
what
it is.
That's what they are. That's all they are. So, there's nothing in there. Nothing interesting in there.
Oh, really?
Nothing against me in there.
No, of course not.
Just a check box that I checked. Basically, long-winded thing that says, do you want to play the game? And I check the box for yes.
What about you, TJ? You're... First, same experience, I'm assuming.
No, I have a slightly different idea about what the terms of service
are. You meticulously read the terms of service?
No, I don't. But I assume when I sign it, it's like, I just assume that what they're saying in the long screed that I would never fucking bother sitting down to read in a million years, I'm actually more likely to read the Bible than the terms of service. But I just assume...
Well, more people actually do, statistically.
I just assume what it says. I just assume that it basically says some version of, we can do whatever we want, and everything that you have is ours, and you're fucked, and you have no rights, and we have infinite rights, and fuck you.
That's pretty true.
I pretty much realize that's what I'm signing every time I fucking check that box.
Yeah. Terms of service, TJ, also known as terms of use, terms and conditions, commonly abbreviated as TOS, TOS with a capital S, TOU... And TNC are legal agreements.
Just call it the fucking TOS.
Shut up, TJ. Are the legal agreements between a service provider and a person who wants to use that service. That person must agree to abide by the terms of service in order to use the offered service. Terms of service can also be merely a disclaimer, especially regarding the use of websites. The terms of service agreement is mainly used for legal purposes by companies which provide software or services, such as web browsers, e-commerce, web search engines, social media, and transport services. So I guess you're wondering, is this legitimate? Is this legally binding? A legitimate terms of service agreement is legally binding and may be subject to change at any time. Companies can enforce the terms by refusing service. So if you don't want to abide by the terms of service, like you want to upload, let's say to YouTube, you know, South Park, that was a fucking case that went with Viacom. You want to do that? That's against YouTube's terms of service. Kick you off the site. Customers can enforce by filing a lawsuit or arbitration case if they can show they were actually harmed by a breach of the terms. There is a heightened risk of data going astray during corporate changes, including mergers, divestitures, buyouts, downsizing, when data can be transferred improperly. So that's an example of the company fucking you over. Like, let's say the company mishandles your data, then you have grounds to sue Google and say, hey, look, my shit's on the dark web now, people are trying to fucking steal my identity, you guys didn't take the proper precautions, now I'm going after you. And here's something that's actually interesting. So this is what TJ actually sent to me and Paul. So now YouTube says it can delete your account if you're not, quote, commercially viable.
Wow.
So this is kind of interesting here. So YouTube...
YouTube! Broadcast yourself!
If you're commercially viable.
Unless you're not commercially viable.
It kind of reminds me of that scene in that movie, Falling Down. Remember they have the guy at the bank? I am not economically viable!
Yep.
It's kind of the same thing now. So YouTube's new terms of service have some users and content creators very worried that the company can delete their account. And notice it's not just content creators, it's also users. In the section titled Account Suspension and Termination, with the subheader Terminations by YouTube for Service Changes, the site's new terms, which are set to take effect on December 10th, adds the following. YouTube may terminate your access or your Google account access to all or part of the services if YouTube believes, in its sole discretion, that provision of service to you is no longer commercially viable. That's all users.
Yeah.
So if you're just posting a bunch of videos to your family and they go, you know what, you're taking up too much space. You're not commercially viable.
See ya.
Get lost.
So, this is Mashable's breakdown. In the most basic terms, if YouTube isn't making money off you, the company can delete your account. The platform's current terms of service do not include this language. So, it's kind of funny because the PR spin of this has been YouTube is making the terms of service more user-friendly to read and to understand. But the reality is now they're actually making it. So, basically, for any reason, commercial viability is totally subjective. You could make some $1 million and say, well, we want you to make $10 million. You're not commercially viable to us.
Right.
So it's just another thing that YouTube can do to any user, not just content creators, to kick you off the service.
It's super comfortable, too, knowing that, like, our channel is demonetized and they've already, like, written us off in that regard. Makes me feel super,
oh, yeah,
super secure, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely not going to clip us.
Yeah, so as written, these broad terms give YouTube the power to delete a creator's account if they upload a live stream video that, for example, doesn't pull enough advertising revenue.
YouTube,
and of course, it also says here, YouTube viewers are on the clear there. Notice the terms are worded to cover everyone that has an account, not just content creators.
Aren't they in total control of the ad revenue that your fucking channel gets anyway?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
It's, so, it's a rigged system.
It's basically, yeah. It's basically them saying we can demonetize and you and then throw you away.
And if you've seen it, like, joining the YouTube Partner Program, like, at the very beginning was more like it is now. It was like, okay, it took you a while, you'd be denied. And then it was opened way up, and it was like, okay. And I kind of knew that. I'm like, there's ads against shit that hardly anyone's watching. Like, this is not going to last. And now it's gone so far back, the standards have gotten so high. And even if you apply for the program, you might wait 6 months to a year to even get denied.
I mean, the writing is on the wall, dude.
Yeah.
YouTube doesn't want to be what it is anymore. It wants to be like another little Netflix where it's got like all this hyper-produced content.
And it's not.
A small group of content creators. Well, right now it's not, but it looks like they're updating our fucking contract but to tell us that it is now.
But the reality is that it's increasingly going to be the death of YouTube, because the more they crack down, the more content that they... Because, look, many people go to the site because they like the content creators who are making this content. They enjoy it. Yeah, there's some corporate media shit in there, and that's fine. Whatever. Obviously, the corporations are going to come to this platform, too. But if you make that just that what the platform is about, no one came to YouTube for that originally. See, Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and all these things was like, this is mainstream content that a lot of people want. That was the sales pitch. It was always about making money off content and doing and going into the streaming game. People didn't come to YouTube for that reason. And if it's going to try to be just this another Netflix or something else, if it's chasing these other companies that have already done it better for years and already have all the deals, like Amazon and YouTube and Disney now, they have no fucking chance. Everyone's getting into this game. They're so fucking far behind. And to fucking just defeat the spirit of what started this site is just exactly why you have to pay attention to this shit. And like, and not enough people, like we're obviously hyper-focused on it, but most people have no idea this is happening. They might just wake up one day, up, their account's gone because your account's not commercially viable now. Well, I mean, and that wasn't even the purpose of YouTube to begin with. So I don't know.
They don't care.
It's just fucked up.
They don't give a shit.
Well, I feel great. I love YouTube, man. What a platform.
What
it's a
great
creator's platform.
Broadcast yourself, Paul, unless you're not commercially viable. If you can, in the case of you're not being commercially viable, then get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out.
Paul's actually gone.
Paul's leaving. Bye, Paul.
Well, you know, but here, in fairness to this, like, look, while YouTube, at this point, probably has one of the worst reputations, you know, in the social media space, it's not surprising they would make a decision like this one. But without people coming over to this stuff or searching for it, who really knows what they're agreeing to? When we use one of the most...
outlook is rosy.
The future is bright.
Outlook is rosy.
The future is bright.
I love it.
So when you use these services, I think the point is you don't even, for the most part, know what you're agreeing to. You have no idea what is... like, basically, in exchange for this service, what are you giving up? So, TJ, don't worry about not reading these agreements. No one reads them.
Why would you?
And
I can tell, I mean, like, spoiler alert, we have infinite rights, you have no rights. We can fuck you in the ass at any time.
Well, they don't have infinite rights, but they have...
They do everything in their power to fucking have infinite
they
rights.
They maximize, well, that's basically what the point of a contract is. It's to maximize your rights and to minimize
and it,
the
like,
rights of the
it's
other
not
party.
A contract. Quit fucking bullshitting. It's not a fucking contract. A contract is something that you and the person you're signing the contract with sit down and fucking work out and review and shit.
It really is a one-sided contract.
This is just some one-sided, like, hey, do we have the right to fucking chop your head off and stomp on your feet and shit? Yes, you do. And if you don't sign that, you can't use the service or you can't do it. Like, I don't even take it seriously. I basically sign it as a, like, all right, I'm not going to take this the least bit seriously, and fuck you. But yeah, I'll sign your bullshit agreement, quote-unquote, but I don't agree to shit you said, so...
So the survey here found that over 90% of consumers accept legal terms and conditions without 100%. Reading them.
100%.
And that's actually bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's 100%.
It's 99.999999.
No one reads that shit.
I'm sure someone's read the terms of service or whatever before, but that's not most people.
No one's read it. I don't think a single person in the history of the human race has ever sat down and read the terms of service for anything they've ever done.
Someone actually has done it, but the guy that did it for a news article that I found. So a Deloitte survey of 2,000 consumers in the U.S. found that 91% of people consent to legal terms and service conditions without even reading them. For younger people, 18 to 34, the rate is even higher, with 97% agreeing to the conditions before reading. The language is too complex and long-winded for most, and apparently consumers are willing to accept the worst most companies will do is sell their name and email to a third party that wants to advertise to them.
Oh, they're going to do way worse than that.
So Jonathan Obar at York University in Toronto and Anne Oldorf-Hirsch.
I just think Oldorf?
Oldorf-Hirsch?
Oldorf-Hirsch.
At the University of Connecticut, conducted a study to get an empirical idea of how far consumers could be conned into going. They created a fake social networking site called NameDrop and wrote up terms and service agreement for users to agree before signing up. In the agreement, they include the disclosure that users give up their firstborn child as payment and that and that anything users shared will be passed along to the NSA. A whopping 98% of participants agreed.
Right.
So when it's
so there's the real answer to how many people are reading this.
So basically, about 2% of people went, wait a minute, I don't want to give my shit up to the NSA or my firstborn child. So obviously this is an extreme example, only existed in an academic experiment. The real agreements are usually there to protect the company from legal trouble. Still, the experiment highlights how easily consumers are willing to waive the rights.
Absolutely.
And they are.
What choice do they have? Even if you fucking read the terms of service and object, if you need the product or service, what the fuck are you going to possibly do?
I mean, a lot of it isn't even centered around shit you need. A lot of the fucking TOSs that I hit are just because I want access to some service, or I want to fucking,
right.
I want to buy groceries from some fucking online retailer. I want to fucking use my Amazon account.
And if
you know what I mean?
And if you object to that, or you object to something like, let's say, Paul, that you sign up for Instacart, and they have a clause in there, well, you can't sue us even if we fuck you over. You can only go to arbitration, and we get to select the arbiter.
Right.
And if you say, no, that's not fair. I want to be able to sue you if you fuck me over. They go, oh, you can't use our service then. And that's just what you would run into. That's another big issue here. But I didn't even get into that. But most of these agreements also force you into arbitration. So you can't sue the company, even if they fuck you over.
Nice. I'd do the same.
You know what?
You'd be an idiot not to.
So maybe
that's the way our fucking system's set up.
So maybe, like we said, the solution is to read the TOS, right? You can just do that. You'll read it. You'll read it. So let's even say if you wanted to read it. Bring up the next article, TJ. How long would it take you? And this is just the privacy policies. Keep that in mind. So reading the privacy policies you encounter in a year, and this is in 2012, so this number's probably just gone up, if anything, would take 76 workdays. So one simple answer to our privacy problems would be if everyone became maximally informed about how much data was being kept and sold about them. Logically, to do so, you'd have to read all the privacy policies on the websites you visit. So a few years ago, two researchers at at Carnegie Mellon decided to calculate how much time it would take to actually read every privacy policy you should. So, first, Lori Faith Craner and Alicia McDonald needed a solid estimate for the average length of a privacy policy. The median length of a privacy policy for the top 75 websites turned out to be 2,514 words. A standard reading rate in academic literature is about 250 words a minute. So each and every privacy policy cost each person about 10 minutes to read. Next, they had to figure out how many websites, so blah, blah, blah. So basically, they figured out, this is what you have to do. So this is the conclusion. So each and every internet user, were they to read every privacy policy on every website, they would spend 25 days a year, out of the year, just reading privacy policies.
And this isn't even the full TOS.
Yeah.
This is just their their privacy.
Just privacy.
And if it was your job to read privacy policies for 8 hours a day, it would take 76 work days to complete the task. Nationalize, that's 53.8 billion hours of time required to read privacy policies. And to put a dollar amount to this massive time suck, Cantor and McDonald followed some standard procedures that economic literature suggests could be calculated, used to calculate the opportunity, the cost of tasks. First, they split up web surfing between work and home visits. For work visits, they value the time spending reading privacy policies at 2 times the worker's wages to take into account overhead and salary. For home visits, they multiply the time spent at home by reading at home by 1/4 of average wages. A simpler hours multiplied by wages calculation would yield a higher cost than the research calculate here. So this is basically the bottom if you go down. So the real cost of privacy, TJ, not only time. So median length of privacy policy, 2,518 words. Time to read, 10 minutes. Number of privacy policies you encounter every year, 1,462. Number of work days to read those, 76. Hours, 53.8 billion. And hypothetical national opportunity cost of reading privacy policies is $781 billion.
Approaching $1 trillion.
Yeah, that's greater than the GDP of Florida.
Yeah, that's how much money the economy would lose out on if people actually took the time to read every privacy
policy
essentially, they came across.
So essentially, there's no possible way, and the economic cost is massive, if people were to actually sit down and go, what am I agreeing to right now?
Right.
And that's not TOS. That's just privacy
policy.
That's
just one part of the TOS that you're agreeing to.
If you just read the privacy policy. It's a joke. No one reads these. They shouldn't even be fucking legal.
And the fact that you have no right to the data. So, I mean, like, that's kind of a crazy issue, but we'll get into that we'll get that a little bit later. So, should you even try to read them, though? So, let's even say, yeah. So, I mean, and I think the answer's obvious, but...
Don't waste your time.
So, here's an excerpt. You can have this up now, but here's an excerpt from an NPR interview, which is called, Why Do We Blindly Sign Terms of Service Agreements? So the following is a conversation about TOS between NPR hosts Audie Cornish and Omri Ben-Sharar. He teaches contract law at the University of Chicago, and he's the co-author of More Than You Wanted to Know, The Failure of Mandated Disclosure. So this guy she's interviewing is literally a contract law expert. He teaches at a university. So this is Cornish. So the idea of mandated disclosure, people might recognize as terms and conditions. And you've studied this issue at one point actually printing out the Apple iTunes contract, right? What did that look like? And this is Sharar responding. Yes, after I received one of their new versions of my iPhone, when I scrolled down, it said page 1 of 55. I emailed it to myself, printed it out, and it looked like a 30-foot-long monster of 8-point font. So, to display it in its enormity, I hung it from the roof building of the University of Chicago Library for all to see, try to exhibit the length and pointlessness of trying to read the disclosures that we receive for all sorts of services. Pointless, so then she responds, pointless even for an expert in contract law? It is pointless, probably even for the lawyers that drafted it, because when they looked at it, that particular version, I found many typos, and it looked like probably not even the disclosures read their own, disclosures read their own text carefully. So literally these things are filled with typos and errors, and it's just at this point, it's a joke.
I got to be honest with you. In other industries, there are laws against this kind of shit. Like, if you'll notice, you don't walk into a Denny's to get a fucking burger at 3 in the morning and have to sift through 50 pages of fucking documents.
Yeah, like, sign a waiver. If you get food poisoning here, Wendy's is not responsible.
So,
Denny's.
The answer to this, and the only answer to this, is the nationalization of the internet and an establishment of either some kind of expansion of our Bill of Rights to...
Privacy protections
and our own presences on the internet. Or a writing of an entirely new digital Bill of Rights that protects people from pernicious corporations who bury a bunch of self-aggrandizing language in a document nobody has time to read.
I mean, this is a contract law expert. This is a guy that can actually read this and understand what he's agreeing to. And he's telling people...
Even he's saying it's a waste of fucking time to even bother trying to read this shit.
I'm forced to agree with this, and even reading it, it makes no sense. It's a bunch of gobbledygook, and you're wasting your life even trying to fucking read through it. So where does that leave most people? If you want to be a global citizen and participate on platforms like Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all these other places that people are, Instagram, wherever, or Netflix, your streaming service, or buy something on Amazon, it doesn't matter what space you're in. You can't just say, well, if I use the internet, I'm exempt. You're not. There's no little safe space where it's like, you know what? The only safe spaces from this shit are companies that actually value it themselves and actually write good TOSs, which some do.
Right.
But beyond that, beyond these good corporate citizens, which is totally voluntary, there is, like Paul said, no legal protection for you, virtually none, except a few federal laws.
Well, you're signing away all your legal protection by hitting the checkbox saying that you read this fucking TOS when you didn't. And you're given really no other option to participate with these. People say, like your numbers earlier said, 1,436 some odd times we run into these as normal people.
Yes.
In a year.
Yep.
You were denied access to all of those fucking things if you don't want to sign up. The racket is obvious.
You're denied access to the internet. You're denied access to the greatest information platform the world has ever known.
Right. And it's been monetized and legally protected to the point where you have no rights in that space. Whatsoever. It's like walking into a Walmart and your life is forfeit.
And it's interesting how little people realize of what their actual data, which is used to basically exploit them to sell things to them, they actually own. Virtually nothing.
Right.
Even if like I have an iPhone, you have iTunes. If I download an app and I buy it, I bought this app. Actually, legally speaking, I don't. I'm even allowed to use that app. I'm allowed to use a version of that app because if I die, my family can't just go, well, he bought that app. No, I was actually using a license of that app.
There are people that say that this would, like, stifle competition, and I'm so... I fucking hate that position. Because it's just like, look around you. How has having to play by the myriad fucking health codes and shit that are all put into place, by the way, to protect you from getting salmonella at the buffet stifled millions of different restaurants all over the goddamn fucking world?
For making millions of dollars and operating successfully in every city.
Weed out the bad fucking players in this market that want to just take advantage of people and find people that are willing to fucking compete with their websites and fucking services on an even playing field that protects the consumer. There's,
you know what that sounds like to me, boy?
Communism. Damn right.
Well, whatever. Whatever it is the right way out of this.
Let me tell you something, boy. That ain't the American way. That there's communism.
So what's kind of the nefarious side of this shit? You know, because people can say, oh, that's all hypothetical.
All of it. What do you mean, what's the nefarious side? What's the not nefarious side?
Well, because a lot of people use this shit, they never have a problem, right? You can buy your shit off Amazon, TJ.
They just don't know the nature of their problem.
That might be so. But you know what? So let's make it in more real terms. So, can you play? Actually, we have the video first, TJ.
All right, video first.
And this is a very brief summation. A lot of people have heard about this. I'm not sure many people have actually deep dive into it. This is Cambridge Analytica.
In 2014, you may have taken a quiz online. Something that looked like this. And if you did, you probably shared your personal data and your friend's personal data with the company that worked for President Trump's 2016 campaign. Here's how it happened. It begins with a research firm, Cambridge Analytica. CA partnered with a UK-based academic, Alexander Cogan, who was using Facebook data for research purposes. Quizzes were sent to around 300,000 Americans. They looked innocuous. Over 100 personality traits to agree or disagree with. And you got paid less than $5. But there was a catch. To take the survey, you had to log into Facebook.
Uh-oh.
Which gave Cogan access to your profile, including your birth date, location, and most importantly, your Facebook likes. Cogan combined the quiz results with your Facebook data to develop a psychometric model, a sort of personality profile.
Basically a psychological profile on you.
He then
right.
combined this with voter records and sent them to Cambridge Analytica. CA claimed that these models were the heart of how they profiled you, your neuroses, and other exploitable traits. But Cogan and CA didn't stop there. His app also grabbed the personal data of your Facebook friends and compiled
who
similar
profiles
of them. Who
never agreed to any of this.
Right.
Or maybe they did.
In just months, 270,000 people took Cogan's survey. And the data of up to 87 million friends was also harvested.
Oops.
Close to one quarter of all US Facebook users. CA then used that data to target people, maybe you, with political messaging. CA said this targeting helped the Trump campaign strategy, but the campaign disputes this. Cogan's work claimed to be for academic research, but he also shared your information with Cambridge Analytica. A violation of Facebook's policies.
So it wasn't about academic research.
So, was it a data breach? Facebook says no, that no passwords were stolen and no systems were infiltrated. But Mark Zuckerberg has said it was a breach of trust between Facebook and its users.
No, just pause it right there, because listen to what he just said. Listen to what he said. Was anything stolen? No. We breached the trust of our users. So what Mark Zuckerberg just admitted is when you agree to the terms of service for Facebook, that they can fucking do this to you.
Yep.
They can fucking sell your data up forever. And we're going to see more. Preempt the article now, because there's something I want to show you in that article.
All right.
So this is basically just a timeline of the Cambridge Analytica scandal.
Beep, boop, beep, boop.
I am RoboZuck.
Did you guys see the wax model of Mark Zuckerberg that was more lifelike
aren't
than...
we looking at him now?
Is that the Madame Tussauds wax museum version of
it
him?
It actually is.
Wow.
The future is private, yeah.
Even
sure.
his wax figure looks like an alien. Weird.
I will devour the human soul.
I have empathy.
I
can
care.
Think like a normal human. I care about more than lining my pockets with money.
I'm going to give money to a hospital. Oh, wait. That hospital sucks. I'm Mark Zuckerberg.
What?
He actually did that. The hospital he opened in San Francisco or gave a bunch of money to was actually the most expensive one in the area.
Great.
I'll figure that one out.
Love it.
So this basically just talks about what they did.
So which part am I looking at?
So just
scroll
down.
You said there was something
and guess what happened with Facebook yet again? Oh, their punishment. Oh, they were fined $5 billion.
Hold on. I'll do a dramatic reenactment of the punishment Facebook received.
Okay.
Yep.
A $5 billion fine.
Wow.
To a company that makes...
Yeah, how much do they make again?
In the last year, I think they made about $20 billion.
So, $5 billion for a company that makes $20 billion a year. So, I mean, that'd be like a fourth of, like, just imagine a fourth of your yearly income after you, like, literally stole the data of 80 million people or some
Facebook
shit.
Facebook earnings. That's all we got to look at. And we'll tell you right now how much they fucking have earned just in the last quarter. Okay. Da-da-da. So their stock is worth about $189 a share currently.
Uh-huh.
That's really hurt them, man. They're fucking suffering, TJ.
Brutal.
Let's see their income. Okay, so let's see.
I need to figure out some way.
Their shares have actually surged in recent.
Of course. Time. Yeah, they're
okay. So
the data brokerage business is a big business.
So when Facebook reported the second quarter results, the biggest surprise was an acceleration in revenue growth. Going into the quarter, management had guided for revenue growth to decelerate during that period. Instead, second quarter revenue increased by 28%, up from 26% in quarter one.
Awesome. Love
it. So has this really affected Facebook? The answer is obviously no.
It might have affected them positively.
We already went through this. Okay, so where did it come from? Okay, was it legal? Here's the part I wanted to show for you, this article. And they're very strongly trying to tie this to Trump.
Trump is the gaudiest motherfucker on the face of the earth.
Look at that fucking weird fucking Hellraiser puzzle box of an elevator he rides around.
Yeah, I know, right?
I kind of like that motif, though. I have to admit that.
Experience the pleasures of hell.
I expect, like, diamond fish hooks to shoot out of that.
You never know.
I will tear your soul apart.
I have to say, this guy on the right was never seen again. Just for you guys, right. Just for information. So Facebook has contested whether the information was really taken without consent.
Oh. Is that Nigel Farage he's up there with? That is.
Yep.
It said in 2008, people knowingly provided their information. No systems were infiltrated, and no password or sensitive places of information were stolen or hacked.
Right. Just admitting right there that they sold this information.
Yeah. So Facebook knows exactly what happened, and they've just admitted that, you know what? It's not a big deal.
Right.
Because you knowingly provided that information, right? You knowingly provided it, except we just proved that no one really knows what's in those agreements. So, no, people actually knowingly didn't know what they were getting into. They knowingly didn't know that a data harvesting company, that people did take the survey, so maybe those people did opt in. Maybe there could be an argument made. Those
But eight, you didn't if you're a friend with one of them.
Those 270,000 people, they got paid. So, yeah, maybe you can argue, yeah, sure, those people agreed to it. What about their 87 million fucking friends? Did they agree to?
You agreed to it the moment...
You signed up for Facebook.
Didn't you sign the TOS before you became that person's friend?
Dude, it's such double speak.
You guys both signed my friendship TOS, right?
Of course.
Obviously.
I just didn't want to read it, so I just checked the box.
I mean, you guys have no idea the kind of shit I'm allowed to do to you.
No, it's really such double speak, too, for them to be like, wait, none of your passwords got hacked. We just gave access to a company you didn't agree to all of the things that your password would unlock.
I mean, like, we just sold you your psychological profile
all
to a bunch of political shit so that they could manipulate you. That's all we done.
You didn't actually agree, but you did agree. That's the thing. Like that's kind of like the double thing. It's like, when you actually signed up the terms of service, you actually did agree.
Right. You just didn't read it.
But you didn't
read
have
it. Time to read it.
And a lot of these services can actually change them unilaterally. So they even say, like, you read through it and said, nope, I don't agree to that. Or that provision's not in there.
Just
and
like fucking YouTube is doing. It's changing its TOS on the fly. Oh, now there's a new rule.
And, of course, they deny everything.
Yeah, do we get to vote on that rule as users of the platform? No.
No.
Is there any protection for us under that rule? No.
The deal. Pray I don't offer it any further.
Yes, I'm sorry, YouTube. Sorry. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. So,
brutal.
There's actually a cool company out there called Terms of Service You Didn't Read, which is a company that's kind of working to inform consumers what they're agreeing to when they sign up for these services.
I'm Trump. I'm the president.
And the main reason this became a story, I can tell you, more than anything, was that it was tied to Trump. I could clearly see that was the media spin to him. And, like, the privacy angle was kind of like, yeah, that's bad, but you know what? Trump.
I'm the fucking president.
Look at that beautiful nunt, dude.
Oh, my God.
It looks angry.
I can't believe it's real still to this day, man. Blah, 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 blah. It's there.
I'm just jealous you'll never have a nunt like that, Paul.
There it is.
Paul Zero. Blah, blah, blah.
Fake news.
Fake. You're the fucking loser.
Don't call me demented, Paul. You're the one that's demented.
I think he has dementia.
No, he said demented. He called me demented.
Sure. Anyway, my hilarious Trump impression is over now. Let's move on to this.
So basically, I like what they fucking have here. I've read and agreed to the terms is the biggest lie on the web. We aim to fix that.
All right.
And they have an add-on, if you're curious, and they've been featured in a number of sites.
Okay.
I love how, like, in order to find out about this, you've got to sign another one of these with this website and get a browser add-on and shit and read through all how they can access that.
So they give ratings. So actually,
let's see what happens. Let's see what their terms of service is. What am I on? Am I on Firefox? Yeah.
I think you're on. Aren't you on Opera?
Yeah, I'm on Opera. What am I thinking?
Yeah, not gonna work.
Oh, no damn Firefox.
Yeah, they have an. Oh, they have an Opera add-on. Cool.
Install it up.
Of course they do.
So right, only 15,000 downloads. So you have it installed now.
I got it.
Terms of service. Terms of service.
The bottom said Internet Explorer coming soon. That's just the irony of growing up from the 90s.
Don't bother with that.
So let's go look at YouTube. They have a D. And if you're wondering, D is not that great of a grade.
So D is basically, I'm assuming this is like letter grades, basically.
So terms may be changed at any time at their discretion without notice to the user.
Yeah. How many other contracts are like that, by the way? Can you think of another fucking contract where the person who you sign the contract with can literally just change the contract afterwards without your consent?
Sounds like a great contract to me. Wonderful. Yeah, I know we just made the deal.
All right, we came to an agreement. You know, it's like, oh, well, I changed it all. You know?
It's like Darth Vader, dude. Pray I do not alter the deal further. That's honestly what was going through my mind when I was reading this shit. Deal.
Pray I don't alter it any further.
Yeah, that was like on a constant repeat in my mind as I read this fucking goddamn shit. I was like, dude, am I fucking making a deal with the Empire? What the fuck is going on?
Process a personal information email. I'd also love... ID, but also device info location.
So basically unique identifier, so it's basically your device knowing who you are. Details of how much you use the service, such as search queries, so all your search records. Your telephony log information, like your phone number, calling party number, forwarding numbers, time and date of calls, duration of calls, SMS routing information, types of calls. So remember, you guys, when you got download the YouTube mobile app, you wanted them going through all your calls, right?
Yeah,
that's what you agree to, right? And who you forward it to and how long you're talking to people and your IP address and your device information, such as crashes, system activity, hardware settings, browser type, browser language, date and time of your request, URL referral cookies. They make you can identify your browser and others to Google accounts, collect information, unique application numbers, local storage and cookies. You agree to all that, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Amen.
That's what you wanted when you got the YouTube app,
I trust a giant corporation with all that shit.
I mean, listen to what it comes down to. If you want to use YouTube, we basically can peek in on your life anytime we want to and use that data however we want.
Sounds good. Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
See, they don't word it that way. They bury it in a 54-page document that nobody's going to read.
And here's down here. The copyright license is broader than necessary. So the user grants YouTube a worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free license that's sub-licensable and transferable. And that can be used without limitation for promotion of the service, any media format, and through any media channel, provided it is in connection with YouTube, its successors, or affiliates. So basically, YouTube can just use your shit anywhere they want.
Yeah, they own it, you don't.
Reduction of legal period for cause of action. Any action against YouTube must begin within 1 year after the cause of action accrues. If not, the cause of the action is considered as permanently barred. So you only have 1 year to go after YouTube if they fuck you over. They can remove your content anytime without prior notice.
Yeah, of course. We know that.
Deleted videos are not really deleted. YouTube may retain, but not.
So they keep them, but you can't have them. Neither can anybody else. Unless they want to use them for ads or something in the future.
Then if you delete a video, it's not really deleted. They still have it.
Right.
So when people say, oh, they deleted that channel, and they say, oh, they can bring it back. And this is actually one of the few ones here. It shows you is the server is only available to users 13 plus. That's a federal law. So that basically has to be in there.
Right. They complied with the law.
The service does not guarantee accuracy or reliability of the information provided. So this might actually even be accurate. Sorry.
Wow.
How about Amazon? Everyone likes to buy shit off Amazon.
Oh, Amazon. I'm sure they're nothing bad in theirs,
no.
Right?
So terms may be changed anytime at their discretion without
notice. Of course,
that's
standard. Standard.
The service can delete your account without prior notice.
Hold on. That's obligatory.
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Yeah. You like this one. The service can delete your account without prior notice and without a reason.
Yeah, who needs a reason?
I just want to delete your account. It's gone. Oh, and of course, the service tracks you on other websites.
Bye-bye account.
So the service uses cookies to track you, even if you're not interacting with them directly. Amazon, for instance, uses cookies to track your device and serve targeted advertisements on other websites.
Wonderful.
Amazon Associates, websites with Amazon Checkout, they, quote, obtain certain types of information when your web browser accesses Amazon or advertisements and other content served on behalf of Amazon or other websites.
Hey, here's that arbitration clause, yeah, which basically means you can't sue them. You got to go to arbitration with them.
Yeah, Amazon fucks
and
them
I
over.
And I bet you... I wonder who gets to choose the arbitrator.
Blocking cookies may limit your ability to use the service. So if you try to block that and don't want them spying on you, can't use the service. Sorry.
Nah.
Oh, and by the way,
Amazon for you.
This service can license user content to third parties. Amazon holds unlimited copyright license on your content.
Good.
That's it.
They deserve it.
Unlimited. No boundaries. They want to go sell your work? They can do it. It's Amazon.
Why shouldn't they have that right?
Jesus. But I still love Amazon, though. I'll still use it every day.
Dude.
What choice do you have?
Every day.
I guess you could go to a brick-and-mortar store.
Yeah, I could go track down a specialty store to buy my leather harnesses and giant black dildos from. Or...
just go here.
I could just order it and have a drone drop it off on my front door every day.
So, Chico, why don't we go to a fucking Twitter? Let's
fucking Twitter.
Fucking Twitter, dude.
The one we've fucking Twitter.
Oh, yeah, it's up there.
Oh, it's up there. Sorry, I missed
it. I mean, look, the one, honestly, besides YouTube, this is one we've had the most shit with.
Very broad copyright license on your content.
They can basically sell you and use you in any kind of fucking
third-party cookies.
So the copyright license is very broad with almost no limitations, which goes beyond the requirement to run the service.
So they're collecting your information.
The service ignores the do not track header and tracks users anyway, even if they set this header. Cool.
The last thing is I love, too. It includes Twitter's right to sub-license or transfer the license to.
Oh, yeah.
So they can sub-license your shit.
The service can delete your account without a prior notice and without a reason.
Yeah.
The service reserves the right to disclose your personal information without notifying you.
Why not?
Of course they do. The service can sell or otherwise transfer your personal data as part of a bankruptcy proceeding or other type of financial transaction. The service can delete specific content without prior notice and without reason. There's a few good ones here. I guess whatever.
You can export your data. So there's obviously
positives. Whatever. Yeah. The service uses your personal data for advertising. We
of
all know that.
Do.
The service is provided as is and is to be used at the user's sole risk. I mean, whatever.
That
I think it goes without saying.
Yeah.
Your personal data is given to third parties. Of course it is. You're an idiot. I mean, I pretty much summarized this at the beginning of this fucking segment. Like, this is unlimited rights for the corporation and zero rights for you.
Well, and I don't want to downplay, too, the you do this at your own risk thing, because you don't have that kind of clause at most businesses.
Right.
Most businesses don't have a big sign out front that says, you know, come shop at Walmart at your own risk.
Although maybe they should start putting those on Popeyes.
So if Walmart fucks up or Popeyes fucks up or any of these other fucking corporations that abide by these rules already fucks up, they can be legally liable if they hurt you or deprive you of fucking income.
I was going to make a po' boy tonight, but I think I am going to Popeyes after this fucking
show. Oh, yeah?
Don't get stabbed or body slammed.
At least get the sandwich.
Oh, that's what I'm going for. I'm going for the fucking
Keep your
sandwich.
Windows rolled up until you're taking the sandwich, you know what I mean?
Hell, yeah.
Watch out for knives.
When reading the fine print can cost you your soul.
When not reading it, TJ.
Not reading it. Yep. Sorry.
Yep.
So this.
Sorry, Paul. I'm reading
this article
wrong.
Actually got.
I'm altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Okay, fair enough.
So, someone actually reading one of these TOSs, they actually got $10,000.
Cool.
So, nobody reads the fine print, but maybe they should. Georgia high school teacher Dolan Andrews won a $10,000 reward after she closely read the terms and conditions that came with a travel insurance policy she purchased for a trip to England. Square Mouth, a Florida insurance company, had inserted language promising a reward to the first person who emailed the company. So that just shows you, it's like, this was probably in there for a long time where someone's like, let me read this. Oh, I can get $10,000?
Damn.
We understand most customers don't actually read contracts or documentation when buying something, but we know the importance of doing so, the company said. We created the Top Secret Pay to Read campaign in an effort to highlight the importance of reading policy documentation from start to finish. Not every company is so generous. To demonstrate the importance of reading fine print.
Oh, they did this on purpose.
Yeah, they did it
on
purpose.
Hoping somebody would find it so they could use it as a fucking publicity stunt. Got it.
Yep. Many companies don't
correct.
Give up. They take. Mischievous clauses tend to pop up from time to time, usually in cheeky England.
Cheeky engine.
Oh, those cheeky. So in 2007, 22,000 people signed up for a free public Wi-Fi, inadvertently agreed to 1,000 hours of community service, including cleaning toilets, relieving sewer blockages.
Damn.
Get to work.
Oh, no. The Guardian
Get down there and clean those turds.
The company Manchester-based Purple said it inserted the clause in its agreements to illustrate the lack of consumer awareness of what they're signing up for when they access free Wi-Fi. Oh, man. And, of course, this is a famous one. On an April Fool's Day's joke, British retailer GameStation inserted a new clause into its licensing agreement. With the checkbox already ticked, if users didn't uncheck the box, they agreed to grant GameStation a non-transferable option to claim, for now and forevermore, your immortal soul. Damn. GameStation said if it chose to excise the soul transfer, it would serve notice in 6-foot-high letters of fire. It just shows you time and time again, even as a joke.
Isn't this like the classic MO of the devil?
Yes.
I mean, Isn't it like
the devil's in the details?
Right. Like, isn't the classic MO of Satan, he shows up.
Don't play cards with Satan.
Right. He's got some kind of great thing that you want, but you just have to sign this little contract, and then there's the fucking giant contract that's 1,000,000 miles long, and he's like, yeah, but you'll get what you want.
You know what, dude? You've made your deal with the devil.
And then you sign, and you get it, and you don't know what the fuck you've lost.
Yep, this is definitely exactly how most people imagine the devil. This is it.
This is the fucking literate, like, modern American corporations with this TOS shit are literally just the modern-day variant of the literary Satan.
Yep. Oh, there's a wonderful game just beyond this door. Just sign this piddling little contract.
Well, can I go
it's also the Willy Wonka maneuver, too.
I know.
And right? Like, busting the Wonka.
Can I go in and look? No.
Fax glorious Dex Mendicottum. You stole fizzy lifting drinks.
I'll play it if you want.
Yeah.
Why
you
not,
lose,
dude?
Good day, sir.
Gene Wilder.
You signed the agreement.
I love this part. And Willy Wonka is basically the devil, too.
Of course.
Undersigned.
All right, hold on.
Let's hear
him,
it, dude.
It's under Section 37B of the contract signed by him. It states quite clearly that all offers shall become null and void if, and you can read it for yourself in this photostatic copy, I, the undersigned, shall forfeit all rights, privileges, and licenses herein contained, etc., etc., fax mentis, incendium gloria culpum, etc., etc., memo bis punitor delicatum. It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You stole fizzy lifting drinks.
That's right, you did.
You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
There you go. I can't think of a better way to surmise what's going on with these.
Yeah, I think Gene
That's
Wilder's
literally it.
Performance.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks.
Dude, I feel like I did steal a fizzy lifting drink.
You lose.
Good day,
I need to belch myself down.
Good day, sir.
Yeah. Well.
Yep, so that's weird Bible stories and TOS tyranny.
So something like 65% of people believe stupid nonsense, and the rest of them sign their lives and rights away on stupid nonsense.
Yep.
Yes, that's correct.
Another uplifting episode.
I love it.
I feel happy.
Well, another episode of the Optimist Cast.
The Happy Cast. Yeah.
You know, I read an article earlier that said happiness is the most infectious emotion. So
I listened to a song that said happiness is a warm gun earlier.
Whoa.
That's true, too.
Sounds like some obscure band came out with that shit.
Yeah. Did you sign the TOS before you listened to that music, though?
I did.
That song owns
yours.
Yeah,
was it on Spotify you listened to it?
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I had to sign that TOS to use the service and access the service, Paul.
Exactly.
Well, that's how it goes.
Spotify now owns me.
So, you stole fizzy lifting drinks!